We're ready to go to work. Red off, green off.
There it is, there it is. All right.
Are you ready?
You ready, Ramona? Yeah. Welcome and good morning to the San Luis Obispo County Planning Commission meeting of Thursday, May 25th, 2006 at 8:45. Madam Secretary, may we have the roll call, please?
Commissioner Gibson?
Here.
Commissioner Christie?
Here.
Commissioner Rappa?
Here.
Commissioner Rose?
Here.
Chairman Melskow?
Here. Next, the flag salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I might mention that the staff reports and things are supposed to be over here on my left. Are they there, Warren? Okay, great. If you wish to speak, there's speaker slips in the back where you come in, and just fill it out, put your name and the item and sign it. Next is public comment, where anyone can speak on any item that is not on the agenda. I have one speaker slip, Mr. Eric Greening.
Good morning. I'm Eric Greening, and the draft budget for the coming fiscal year is now out and will be acted on formally by the supervisors on June 19th, 20th, and maybe 21st. And when it was introduced, I asked whether the conservation element, work on the conservation element, was incorporated therein. And I was later informed that indeed it was, that we are intending to make a real start on the conservation element, and that as budgeted, it is presumably possible to incorporate in some form the suggestions I've made for a biological resources advisory committee and a cultural resources advisory committee, or some other form of bringing in biological and cultural expertise. So I guess I would just ask during planning staff updates for any information about the expected timing on how this is going to come together, the role of your commission, assurance that the Water Resources Advisory Committee will be warned well in advance when it needs to become active on this, because sometimes it takes a summer month or two off, but if it needs not to, it can make plans in advance to meet during the summer. Certainly things keep happening during the summer. And then anything we can do to prepare in advance to marshal the expertise that's needed on the biological and cultural issues so that it's actually in place when we're moving forward would be very, very helpful. So anyway, that's my request, and I'm just very glad to see that we are getting ready to embark on a robust effort on the conservation element update. Thank you.
Thank you, Eric. Anyone else wish to speak? If not, then we'll move on to staff updates.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Warren Hogue, Department of Planning and Building. First, I would like to give you a status update on our scheduling of Planning Commission study sessions that were identified as priorities by your commission a while back. First, as you know, on today's agenda is the fire safety standards and laws study session in the afternoon that Rob Lewin of CDF will give. We've scheduled please don't think that we're going to forget anything. We won't. It just may take a while to work it into the Planning Commission workload on the agenda and the staff workload as well. The other thing I wanted to mention was board actions on items of interest to your commission. There wasn't really anything definitive done at the May 9th meeting, but at the May 16th meeting, the board did approve the EIR and the master plan for the San Luis Obispo County Regional Airport. That was a significant piece of work that didn't directly involve your commission, but did involve planning staff as well as general services staff. Also, the board took action on amendments to the South County Area Plan, the Growth Management Ordinance, Title 19, the Building and Construction Ordinance, and the Land Use Ordinance regarding growth rates in the Pomo and priority, moving up on the priority list certain identified projects. And if you need more information on that, possibly Cammie Griffin could give you those details if she's been listening to what I've been saying. And that was pretty much it. In terms of, we gave you an update at the last meeting about the board meetings that preceded it. So unless you have any particular interest in other items that I haven't thought of, I'll just move on. In terms of other staff update items, that's all I have.
Did you have anything to add to Eric's conservation committee?
I'll tell you what I can.
Okay.
I tried to call the project manager or the division manager in charge of the conservation element, John Ufrat, and I didn't get him. So this is what I know. Yes, the conservation element update work is in the budget. It'll be phased over a couple of years. It will take time to get it started because, you know, we'll have to do scopes of work and go out for requests for proposals, select consultants. That all takes time. I haven't been privy to the internal discussions about exactly how the whole process will proceed. I know peripherally that it has been discussed about advisory committees, but I would have to let Mr. Ufrat fill you in on the details of that. It's early in the process, so I think there's still some details to be hammered out. Obviously, there will be other agency involvement, key agencies, and obviously your planning commission will be involved in incremental study sessions and ultimately public hearings on the conservation element. But we're talking about a 2 or 3 year project, probably, okay, from start to finish. But this is also going to address many of the things that are called for in ag and open space element policies that Mr. Greening and others have been eager for years to have us get started on. So we're pretty excited about it. That's the most I know at this point.
All right.
I could try to arrange for Mr. Ufrat to come sometime later in the meeting and fill you in if you have a desire to know more.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll see what other commissioners would like. Thank you. Bob, you got a question?
I did have a question. Warren, next time at our next meeting, I believe we're having a study session on the park and rec element. And
correct.
Jointly with the Parks Commission, I was kind of wondering how's that going to work? And I know
that's the main event of the day. There's no other noticed public hearings or scheduled items other than consent agenda. And it will be a joint study session with the Parks and Recreation Commission. All of you will be sitting up here. You know, we'll find a way to make that work. And you'll receive a staff presentation, and you'll have ample time to have a open discussion with the Parks and Recreation Commission. It's not a formal public hearing. Again, I want to emphasize the study session date is June 8th. There was some confusion over whether it was a different date or not. It's the next regular meeting, June 8th, and then the first public hearing is July 13th, which is a regular. Let me check that date. I just want to make sure my memory's not failing me. Yes, that's July 13th. That's the first official public hearing date. And those all occur during regular meetings. We're not at this point seeing a need for a special meeting. If we were going to schedule a special meeting for something like this, we would certainly work with your commission well in advance, because we know that you all have busy schedules, and that during the summer months that's even more so of a consideration.
Mm-hmm. Will the EIR, which is still in the draft stage, be a subject of discussion for the study session, or are we going to hold off until we get the final?
At this point, from what I know, the EIR will not be available in time for the study session, the final EIR. The draft is. And, in fact, it probably would be a good idea to have the ability to comment on the draft. June 22nd. And it's full with a variety of items The TDC amendments are coming to you that day.
Oh, great.
So that's probably the headliner. We have a couple of CUPs. We have the affordable housing standards are coming. And the mobile home park and condo conversion ordinances are coming that day. So it's a big day on the 22nd. June 8th is really the parks and recreation element in the morning, and that's all we've scheduled. Of course, if your commission at the Parks and Rec Commission want to take more than a morning, that's certainly your prerogative. So you might want to rest up on June 8th for June 22nd because that's a big day.
All right. Any other comments?
I just have a comment, question. Since this is scheduled as a study session, I've had some people in District 3 interested in this. Would the study session be an appropriate time to air their comments or voice their concerns?
It's really going to be up to the pleasure of your two commissions, but typically, even at study sessions, your commission has the practice of accepting public comment.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But I would encourage anyone who gives comment at the study session, if they really want their comments officially on the record for the whole adoption process, they should submit them in writing or bring them, come back and speak again at the first public hearing.
Mm-hmm. All right. That it? All right. Thank you. Next, the consent agenda. Is everyone comfortable with?
I move approval.
All right. Could you hold just a minute because we have to go to the public.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So if I don't see any items pulled, anyone from the public wish to speak on the consent agenda? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the commission. Now the motion is in order.
Now I move approval of the consent agenda.
And now I'll second it.
All right. It's been moved and seconded. Any more discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. So carried. Okay, item number two. Next, Madam Secretary, may you announce item one?
Continued hearing to consider a request by EDA Colin Weirich for a vesting tentative track map. County file number SUB 2004-00331. Supervisorial District 1, Josh LeBombard, Project Manager.
Good morning, Planning Commissioners. Josh LeBombard, Planning Staff. Staff is requesting a continuance off calendar for this item. There's some necessary information, environmental information, relating to the mitigated negative declaration that we still need to obtain. And there is a possibility of incorporating some of the area on the west of this property into residential single family. Our long-range planning division is currently in the process of looking at rezoning specific properties in San Miguel. And this, the industrial portion of this one is one of those properties. So we're requesting a continuance off calendar for this item, and I'm here for any questions.
Any questions?
Yeah, I did have one. In the Tribune, they said the Planning Commission was going to discuss a 20-lot subdivision that had some cadmium issues. And I says, gee, I didn't know that. Was that this one they were referring to?
One of the there was a Phase 1 and a Phase 2 environmental site assessment done for this property initially. One of the samples that were done on this property did raise concerns of cadmium. The levels of cadmium were over the regulatory limits. That was one of the issues that was raised in the mitigated negative declaration. We, as planning staff, developed mitigation for that. We were going to, the mitigation for it was to completely remediate the site to levels meeting regulatory limits prior to recordation of the map. There were some questions raised regarding where the cadmium came from that the Phase 1 and Phase 2 didn't really address appropriately. That's what our Environmental Health Division is currently working on right now.
Thank you.
I just have a quick question for County Council. At our last meeting, we heard that it was problematic to continue things off calendar for reasons related to the Permit Streamlining Act. And staff is recommending this be continued off calendar. I wonder if council had any comments on that.
The only comment I have is that it appears that there may be a change of the project here, which may require additional environmental review. So I don't, in light of that, I don't see a problem with continuing it.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. That it on questions? I do have two speaker slips. First was Mr. David Broadwater. David, I'm wondering, could you...
found in average agricultural soil in the state, so there's some concern, and looks like a need for further site analysis and soil sampling to define that contamination. But there had been a Phase 1 environmental assessment that was done in 2003, which includes some aerial photographs and other material, which has yet to be received by county staff. And also, as I understand in my last conversation with Mr. Labar, that a full set of site photographs from that the Phase 2 ESA and laboratory results, the full lab reports have yet to be received and digested. So that's causing part of the problem in terms of gathering all the information so that Mr. Labar and Environmental Division can develop a work plan to submit to the Mr. Wyrick for a complete site analysis. And I think... Mr. LeBombard can verify or correct me if I'm wrong about the information, but I've been in pretty regular contact with folks on this. The Regional Water Board can't yet tell whether or not they would have a lead agency role in this because they lack the adequate information to figure out whether or not there are some surface or groundwater contamination issues that might be raised here. And I believe they've written the planning department to that effect. And so I just want to point out, I don't know what kind of enforcement or capabilities your commission has regarding trying to make sure that the information that's been requested is actually submitted to the responsible people and the staff. But oftentimes I know that government is blamed for throwing roadblocks and obstacles in the way of people's particular projects, and I would like to point out that in this particular case, that's not the case. The roadblocks and delays, such as they may exist, are not the result of anybody working for the government at this point. And I do appreciate being able to work with Mr. LeBombard and Mr. Labar Environmental Health and communicating with them and sharing information. Thank you.
Let's hope that this being off calendar will give plenty of time to look at all these issues.
I would hope so. I mean, we were wondering back in March 9th at the meeting whether or not continuing all the way to this date would be enough time.
Yeah.
And some thought, well, it could be, but... you know, apparently it's not yet at this point. And I do submit the staff's recommendations to continue this off calendar for that purpose. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, not Mr. Broadwater, but the staff.
You're not on the mic there.
No, that seems on. That seems
red off, green on.
I
can hear you.
Oh, there we go. Is that there?
Can you do this? Or are you? No, on the metal.
Here, you want to use mine?
Clearly a conspiracy here.
That's right. The grand jury was here yesterday.
That's right. No comments, sir. Refresh my memory, if you would, Mr. LeBombard. The environmental determination we're working under here is headed toward an EIR. Where are we on that?
That's yet to be determined right now. We still need necessary information to be able to determine what the levels of cadmium and other heavy metals on the site are right now. Our Environmental Health Division has analyzed both the Phase 1 and Phase 2 studies and has determined that we need a little bit more information regarding cluster sampling and a little bit more information, background information.
So this like really is a matter for Environmental Division. I mean, they're in the midst of their environmental determination on this. Is that where this project is?
Environmental Health is working as a referral agency to our department, the Planning Department, and our Environmental Division. So Environmental Health will be assisting us regarding the site contamination. So we've issued a negative declaration for this property. There have been some issues that have been raised that have facilitated or made necessary the request for more information.
Has there been a request for review on that, Nick?
There wasn't a request for review. There was a letter that was submitted at kind of the last minutes right before the Planning Commission. That's why we continued it from last hearing. to this hearing. We're still in the process of getting that information, so we don't know what the level of appropriate environmental review is going to be.
Just to build on that question, Mr. LeBombard, can the county require an EIR after we've already done a neg deck?
Yes.
Okay. I just really want to thank staff for putting the extra effort in to do some more investigation on this project. I think the public health interests are really warranted the additional time it's taking. And also wanted to thank the members of the public who've been working to bring some of these issues to everyone's attention.
Bruce, could you, is your mic?
I think there's there. Strange things happening here. I just...
It's working now, right?
Yeah. Oh,
okay. All right.
Well, I have something controversial to say. Yeah, that's right. That's the bug.
All right. I have one more slip. Mr. John Walker.
Good morning. My name is John Walker. I'm here today representing a company called...
Announced.
Hearing to consider a request by R.W. Hertel and Sons, Avila Village, LLC, for a conditional use permit to allow development of a swimming pool, spa, and restrooms, all accessory to and for the exclusive use by guests of the existing adjacent Avila Village Inn in the San Luis Bay Coastal Planning Area, County File Number DRC2004-00215, Supervisorial District 3, Mike Wilkin, Project Manager.
Morning, Mike.
Morning. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the Commission. My name is Mike Wilkin, County Planning Staff. This is a conditional use permit to build a swimming pool, a spa, restrooms, and accessory structures on a site in the San Luis Bay Estates Commercial Center. And the facilities will be for the private and exclusive use by guests of the Avila Village Inn, which is adjacent to this site. The location map here shows general location of the property near the intersection of San Luis Bay Drive and Avila Beach Drive. This is a land use category map that shows the site in the recreation land use category. It's about 8,000 square feet in area. It's a lot in the tract that created the commercial center for San Luis Bay Estates. I believe this is the last remaining lot to be developed in that commercial center. Here's a photo of the site looking to the west, and the pool area that's proposed is in the center. You can see that the site is fairly level. It was graded in connection with the tract and development plan that created the commercial center for San Luis Bay Estates. There are some temporary improvements on the site right now, consisting of a gazebo and some landscaping that you don't see here on this photo. The Avila Village Inn is on the left of the screen. As you can see, that's on the adjacent property under the same ownership as this site. And this is the rear area of the site. The property line is approximately in the vicinity of the two retaining walls that you see there. Riparian habitat associated with San Luis Obispo Creek is on the left. The actual creek itself is about 200 feet to the left off the photo. And you can see the Bob Jones bike path also on the left at the bottom of the slope. The specific improvements that are being proposed with this project are the pool, spa, two restrooms, a towel room, a pool equipment room, landscaping and fencing, and all the structures will be less than 14 feet in height. This is the site plan that's proposed, showing the location of the pool, the spa, the pool equipment room here is near the parking area in the front, restrooms, towel room, and some perimeter landscaping and fencing. And then you can see the location of the Avila Inn on the left and the parking area that's existing up at the top. And actually, this lot does include several parking spaces along the parking lot. Traffic and parking was determined not to be an issue in this case because the swimming pool will be accessory to the inn. It won't be open to the general public, and so there really won't be any traffic generation associated with this proposal, and no parking concerns. Drainage from the pool area will be into the sewer system for San Luis Bay Estates, and as far as noise goes, there will not be any outdoor amplified sound unless there's a noise study that demonstrates that the sound levels will be in accordance with the noise element. And the applicants have agreed to a condition in that regard. The Avila Advisory Council did have some comments. They wanted to make sure that there would not be general public use of the facilities and that there would be no loud music and that drainage would not cause impacts to San Luis Obispo Creek. And the way the project has been designed and conditioned, all of AVAC's concerns are satisfied. In conclusion, the use is accessory to the adjacent inn. It will not be used by the general public. It's consistent with the San Luis Bay Estates master plan and with the planning area standards for that area, and all concerns from the AVAC have been satisfied. And staff's recommendation is to approve the conditional use permit DRC 2005-00215 based on the findings in Exhibit A and the conditions in Exhibit B.
Okay, any questions of staff? Penny, I'll let you start. It's in your district.
I don't have any questions. Okay. It's pretty straightforward.
Okay. Captured by the sewage treatment.
Yes.
So then on page 252, Mr. Goodwin's question has been answered, which is, or maybe not, maybe this is a separate issue. He says, does the drain to creek need a fossil filter or other device to clean up water before discharge? So there's two separate issues, as you've just clarified. There's the pool itself and the surrounding area drains to the water treatment facility, but the larger runoff from the site, it looks like, is going to drain directly to the creek?
Well, ultimately, it would drain towards the creek, I believe, but probably with all the landscaping and around the site, it may infiltrate into the ground before it actually gets to the creek. The creek is about 200 plus feet away. I think the concern by Mike Goodwin in this referral on page 2-52 was having to do with water from the pool, I believe.
Okay.
The chlorinated water. And that has been everybody's concern.
So there's no storm drain per se that is collecting the general surface runoff from the site and directing it as a point source into the creek?
No.
It's just general. So there may be an interest in doing some kind of, vegetated swales or something. But there's no... there's no opportunity to provide a filter, as he's suggesting, a filter per se.
Well, I think there is an opportunity, but I think the fact that the pool runoff will be going into the sewer system probably satisfies that concern that Public Works had in this referral. I think it's basically going to be the rainwater that falls on the landscaped areas of the site that's the other runoff, and perhaps the project architect who's here can speak to the
that'd be great.
How the drainage might be handled, the drainage that's not going into the sewer system.
Right, the surface runoff. And then also the consistency with Land Use Ordinance 22.106.050B4B. This has to do with, looks like, topographical changes in the floodplain. It says the project is consistent with this standard for floodplains containing natural habitats to be preserved in their natural state because the site has been filled to raise it above the floodplain and does not contain natural habitat. Which
condition you on there?
It's
2-3, the second or third paragraph.
Second paragraph.
Okay.
So that sort of begs the question, if there was natural habitat there before that's no longer there because the site has been filled and now it's out of the floodplain, how was this condition met prior to the existing fill? I mean, I'm a little uncomfortable that we're saying it meets the standard because all the vegetation's been removed and the site's been filled, so therefore it no longer applies. How was that standard applied to the previous activities?
Well, frankly, I'm really not sure what vegetation was on the site prior to the grading, but the grading that was done for this site was done in accordance with the approved tract and development plan. It was approved by the Planning Commission that created the lots for the commercial center and the grading. I think a condition of that project was to raise the site up out of the floodplain.
Okay,
and so the grading was done in accordance with those conditions.
As preparation for the previous project, right, which is now no longer being considered.
Right.
And then,
so that's correct.
Okay, so my last questions really had to go to the proximity of this development to the Bob Jones bike trail. And we saw from the photos that it's pretty close. And Parks, the letter from Parks had a few concerns and suggestions. I think it's page 256. And there were some also comments from the public about the condition of the Bob Jones bike trail in proximity to this project. So one of Parks' earlier comments had proposed some either public or private access to the bike path from the proposed project, which seems like a sensible thing to do since people are going to be gathering there, and the Bob Jones bike trail is certainly an attractive feature of that locality. Is there any way for people who are at the pool to go to the bike trail, or is it going to be, can they just like walk out there generally, or is there going to be fence to prohibit that, in which case should we have some break in the fencing or some way to direct people in a managed way to the bike trail?
There actually is a way. I'm not good at north, south, east, and west, but on the west side, I believe, of the inn, there's access. I mean, the whole San Luis Bay Club, all of it has an access point. It does show as private property, but people who are within that area have a very short distance to get down to the trail.
So you feel like there's, I don't know if Parks...
There's an easement intended to be for the bike path that is in the vicinity of the bike path that has not been accepted yet, to my understanding.
So the bike path is built and being used, but the easement hasn't been accepted yet?
That's my understanding.
There's been sort of an ongoing discussion between San Luis Bay Estates and the Parks Department, and I understand from Supervisor Lenthal they're getting very close to remedying the situation of not a clear easement, because there are improvements that need to be made. Of course, there's liability on the part of San Luis Bay Estates and those homeowners there. So I know Supervisor Lenthal, that's one of his main goals, is to resolve that issue and to kind of make that area complete.
Okay. Well, because my only thought was, and I don't have any problems with them building a pool and a clubhouse here, but if that easement is still in question and there may still be some improvements or changes that need to be made along that section of the trail, do we need to build something into the language of the conditions to clarify the property owner's responsibilities there?
I don't think the easement difficulties lies with RW Hertel, because the easement and the discussions have gone on for a long time, and they deal with the Homeowners Association. They're part of the Master Association, but they're sub-parts to it, and that's been the difficulty. I don't believe it's this particular applicant's ability to do this. Jan can certainly correct that, but it's been ongoing. Anytime you deal with homeowner groups, it sometimes takes a while.
I know that. Does Parks have anything they'd like to add?
I was going to ask Jan, do you have any new more information, or... can you help clarify this?
I'm Jan DeLeo with County Parks. Just basically to reiterate some of what has already been said, it's correct. We have not accepted this portion of the Bob Jones pathway, and it basically goes from San Luis Bay Drive all the way to Avila Beach Drive or Boulevard, I don't remember which it is, over by the little sewer plant. Adding to this is a little bit of more confusion in that when the map was originally recorded, they dedicated a portion for the pathway between San Luis Bay Drive and Blue Heron, and the path was not actually built within the easement that was dedicated. So what has been going on, and this is between Rob Rossi, the Homeowners Association, and Mallard Green and County Parks, is they put together a new legal description that actually describes where the path was built. We have not been able to accept that to date because of negotiations regarding maintenance. It's mainly addressing the issue of Blue Heron because it's used for vehicles and such. Who would maintain, who would have the primary responsibility for maintaining Blue Heron? When Parks looked at this development, our only concerns were whether there had been some encroachments accidentally, again, since there's a little bit of confusion where that easement actually is, if there had been some encroachments, and a little bit of concern about drainage and how it sheet flows not only over the adjacent property, but over the path and to the creek. And those are some of the comments that were reflected in my letter. And I believe Mike has put together in the existing conditions a condition that basically says they will locate the Bob Jones pathway in relation to their property and work with us to resolve any of those issues should they occur. And it rightfully so, there may be some confusion on Hertel's side since none of us seem sure where that pathway is. No, but because the easement was not recorded accurately in the first place. So I don't know if I made it more confusing or if I actually clarified anything.
I just, you know, you all, staff knows the situation far better than certainly I do. I just don't want to miss any possible opportunity that we have before us today, since this is a discretionary conditional use permit. If there's a condition that would help the county resolve this question that we could attach to this permit, either about existing encroachments or future obligations, I just don't want to let that opportunity slide by. And if staff has any suggestions, I think we should talk about it. But if staff is okay with it, then I'll be happy to defer.
I'd like to address that. And I'll go back to this photo that I was showing before of the rear of the site.
There it goes.
Okay. To the best of staff's knowledge, the property line for this site is in the vicinity of the two retaining walls. So that's a little distance away from the bike path. And the encroachments that we've been talking about, I think, are the wall. Is that correct, Jan?
Yes.
The wall here that extends really close to the bike path and some of the grading that's been done adjacent to the bike path and the drainage flowing.
Project, and maybe we just need to add drainage to that as well. But maybe he can continue, and then we can resolve this together.
Staff does have some language in the event Planning Commission wants to pursue this, but the point I wanted to make was that, to the best of our knowledge, the property line is up here, and this area of concern with the encroachments appears to be off this site and owned by a different property owner. This site and the hotel are owned by Hertel, and the area in here where the possible encroachments are owned by Rob Rossi, as well as the area where the bike path is and the area beyond the bike path. So staff's feeling is, at this point, that these may be off-site. However, it's not completely certain, and perhaps the project architect can testify to the location of the property line in this area. But I know the Parks Department has some uncertainty about the relocation of the easement in relation to the property line. So having said that, if the Commission wants to pursue this approach, we can craft some language that addresses that in the event the encroachments turn out to be on this site. If the encroachments are not on this site, I don't think we have the ability to condition this project.
I guess I would just add, too, and I, you know, we use this on a regular basis. The buckling and the problems are east of this particular area. They start just as you come right off of San Luis Bay Drive as you come down. This area actually is in much better shape than the section to the east of that or to the section far west of that where they've had tree damage. I mean, the storms that came through here did a lot of damage. To be honest with you, it probably floods more from the creek than it does, and that's why the elevation and moving it above the 100-year floodplain, which the applicant has done and is part of their application, is really important because that section between San Luis Bay Drive and Blue Heron, or I think it's actually the street before that, the little driveway that comes down, is where it floods. more so than drainage in many ways, except they had some off of that street that's got the blockade across it.
And maybe just again as a clarification, looking, I have the assessor parcel pages there, and again, the area I'm talking about is not Hertel's property either. If you look at the back of that, it is a different property owner. So that's been what we've been wrestling with. It doesn't seem like Hertel is really involved in this. It's different adjacent property owners.
Yeah, and the drainage was, or the drain, quote, whatever, was there before the inn was even built. We've watched the inn go up, and it's east of that, and it happened before the inn was even, if it's to say it happened. I mean, there was, I think it's more coming from the creek than it is coming down, but that's just my opinion.
Point out. Oh,
there it is.
This is the Avila Village properties are shown here, and then you can see they're smaller down here, but then it shows the adjacent properties. And again, here's the Bob Jones Pathway, here's San Luis Bay Drive, here's Blue Heron over here. And you can see here's would be probably Avila Village Inn, and then this is adjacent property is owned by somebody else. You know, it's kind of blurry up there, but you can get the general impression.
All right. Is that all the questions at this point?
I've got a couple here. Starting on page 26, condition 5, the lighting, and the last sentence, lamps shall be low-pressure sodium. Do we need that level of detail? I mean, maybe someday there'll be a better light than sodium.
The reason staff included that was because that was a condition from the development plan for the commercial center, so staff wanted to carry that forward to this project. But it's up to the commission's discretion.
When the applicant gets up, maybe he can comment if there's a better way of achieving the light trespass issue. He could comment on that. The next is condition number 6. You're referring to the coastal land use ordinance. I presume this is not in the coastal zone, is it? So should that be a 22?
Thank you. That should be a 22, and I don't have the reference now.
Well, maybe somebody, before we get to make any motion, somebody could iron that out.
We're going to get that in a minute.
Okay. Next on page 27, condition number 10. Prior to issuance of a construction permit, the applicant shall execute and record a covenant and agreement.
That was the condition on the overall development plan for the center.
What's the difference? I'm not familiar with low-pressure sodium lamps.
I'm not that familiar myself. Maybe the architect has something to say about the low-pressure sodium. I did do a little bit of
research. He's smiling, so I think he's got something to say about that.
All right. Is that the end of questions for staff?
Yep.
If so, we'll move to the public, and the applicant is first. And this is Mr. Craig Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the Planning Commission. Craig R. Smith. I'm the agent for the applicant, H.W. Hertel, and I'm also the architect of record. Thank you for your time this morning. I'd like to thank Michael and the staff for their excellent work. Quite an involved review process is in some cases typically here. We have reviewed the conditions of approval. We've reviewed the mitigation summary table, the developer statement, and all the input memos that have been part of the staff report with comments from all other agencies. And we're in acceptance and approval of their recommendations and findings. I would like to address some of the questions you had, so I'll take them in the order they came. And again, most of this was touched upon by staff, but maybe I can elaborate or provide greater detail. The surface drainage, basically, it's a requirement to, and I'm talking about the deck drainage now, the actual deck drainage that would take, say, pool water as it would overflow or come onto the deck, is actually going to go into a holding tank and then into the system. And that's a requirement of the California swimming pool or the health mandate. And I might add, this project will go to the health department for a plan check at the construction document or the follow-up to the entitlement or the planning approval. And that would be addressed. It's also a condition of the San Margalito will serve commitment, meaning that's a requirement. It's no different than across the street at the Avila Athletic Club. They have a pool there, or pools, I should say, and spas. Same concept. The surface drainage off-site, we have no control. That site adjacent to the trail, as I think was indicated on the photograph, basically, it's not our property, so there's nothing we can do to that. I can assure you on our lot there's no surface drainage that would go onto that property. It's all contained and would be accordingly. There was a question on the site grading, and the site grading was performed as a condition of the track. When they came on site, we did turf it primarily for erosion mitigation to minimize essentially any erosion issues, and obviously provided as some interim use before this project was built. And I think it looks a lot nicer than if we had left it open. And I think it in all honesty, is a was an improvement that prevented or minimized any surface erosion. So it had that aspect. The access to the trail is going to remain the same after this is completed as it now exists. Along the side yards in between the buildings are pathways. That's a condition of the overall development plan, and there's no change or modification to that. The walkway that was built adjacent to the hotel, I guess that would be on the south side, will remain open to the public. There's no gate or fence. It's open and would allow access. So that's to remain, as would also on the other lot adjacent to that. There's full access to both sides of the property towards the trail. With respect to the comments from Parks, I think HW Hertel has every intent, as they have to date, to cooperate with the other property owners, to work with Parks and Rec to complete the trail, and certainly to ensure as it impacts that back area that they can be of any assistance. I don't think that the condition or situation is going to change by any means. And lastly, concerned with the property line, Michael hit it right on the, it's right up above that retaining wall. So again, all of that improvement work of the retaining wall specifically are off-site to the rear of the property, and effectively we have no control to that. Let me see. Oh, the low-pressure sodium vapor lights. Those are actually the parking lot lights that are now in. So the condition of approval was that should any of that frontage light be improved or modified, it certainly would want to comply to that. The on-site lights we would like to keep low, and they effectively would not be low sodium, but they would be like a site light or a safety or a low light that would be effective to a pathway light, say. It could be low sodium, but I don't think that's what you would want there. I think that wouldn't be appropriate. Low sodium puts out a more of a soft, warmer glow. It's pink or yellow in nature. You probably see it. It's more typical in, say, street lighting or street lamps as you see it, or the street lights themselves. And certainly I think that was that condition of approval carried over, that should any parking lot lighting be added or modified, that we comply to the
more attractive, because right now what it is basically bare dirt and retaining walls, but you don't have the ability to do any landscaping. But you know, it's just, it seems like such an odd configuration.
It is, and maybe, you know, all things being equal, when the easement is resolved with the homeowners association, maybe that can be in a condition or in at least some guidelines or some, you know, maybe a master plan to that. Commissioner Rappa is completely correct. That trail effectively has been damaged more by the flooding, specifically even the amount of rain that we have had recently. And that's pretty typical. Asphalt, once the water gets underneath it, you know, it pretty much starts to move and bend, and that underlayment starts to expand, and it becomes a big problem. So I think maybe something to consider, or the commission should consider, is that, you know, the trail be, and I think Jan hit it right on the money, is that mitigation or devices or methods to prevent that water from getting under pavement in as many conditions as possible. Actually, the trail's in one of the best shapes directly behind this property. It's probably one that's held up the best as compared to, say, going farther north or east, whatever that is, where it is considerably more damaged.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions?
All right. If not, thank you, Mr. Smith.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Anyone else from the public wish to speak on this item? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the commission.
I would just have a question of staff. Since on page 2-6, condition number 4, really deals with the parking lot, which is not actually part. It is part, but it isn't part of this application.
Condition number 4?
Right, site development. Oh, excuse me, condition number 5, I'm sorry, under
yes.
Site development.
Yes. Staff would recommend then, after having heard the explanation from Craig Smith, that the very last sentence should read, lamps shall be low intensity.
That's fine, but I guess what I'm saying is this condition makes it appear as if this application goes to this particular swimming pool and such, and it isn't. What we're talking about is the parking lot that's adjacent to it.
Well, the intent of this condition was for any exterior lighting that would be around the pool, any lighting fixtures to light the pool area and the deck around the pool. We wanted to make sure that that would be low-intensity
okay.
lighting.
It seems confusing to me, but that's okay. We'll
okay.
I'm sure everybody can live with it.
All right.
Did you
any
come
more
up
questions?
With your land use ordinance?
Yes. In condition number 6, in the third line, it should say land use ordinance, chapter 2252.
Okay. Anything else? If not, a motion would be in order.
I would move that we adopt the mitigated declaration in accordance with the applicable provisions and that we approve the conditional use permit DRC 2004-00215 based on the findings in Exhibit A and the conditions in Exhibit B amended to reflect condition number 5, the last sentence, lamps shall be low pressure sodium, be deleted, and that condition number 6 be amended to reference chapter 22.52.
I'll second that. But I was under the impression that staff wanted lamps shall be low intensity rather than just scratch the whole.
Maybe
Mr. Wilkin could confirm or deny.
That was our recommendation.
Okay.
To just the last sentence to read, lamps shall be low intensity.
That's fine with the maker of the motion.
Okay, and the second agrees.
All right. Any more discussion on the motion? If not, may we have a roll call, please?
Commissioner Rappa?
Aye.
Commissioner Rose?
Yes.
Commissioner Gibson?
Yes.
Commissioner Christie?
Yes.
Chairman Melskow?
Yes.
I guess I would encourage my fellow commissioners to get out their bike or get out their walking shoes and come down there and have a great time because it's really beautiful.
It's a wonderful trail.
Yeah.
It's just so far to drive in our single occupancy vehicles to get there.
Come together, carpool.
Bike it down there. Come on.
Use the Rapid Transit Authority.
Yeah.
Reston, right.
Yeah. All right. That gets us to item 3. May we have that announced, please?
Hearing to consider a request by Thomas Hastings, et al., for a vesting tentative tract map to subdivide 2 existing parcels into 12 parcels for the purpose of sale and or development in the Salinas River
to the east. Here's a picture of the map for you. The map has some characteristics. There's some steep slopes leading from the Salinas River to the projects to the area to be developed. There's a road abandonment request that goes along with this tract, and that road is here in blue. The proposed parcels are between 1 and 2.4 acres, with a 7.2 remainder parcel that is mostly in the Salinas River and a tributary to the Salinas River. The road abandonment has been reviewed by Public Works, and there has been no concerns about that. Truly, because it's in the road, it hasn't been used, if ever, in a long, long time. Here's an aerial of the site.
At one time, it was vineyards. There's three main issues with this project, the first one being geology. This, based on this, the bluff nature of the site, this project's been through extensive geology. It's had several geology reports that addressed slope saturation, bluff erosion, slope failure, leach fields, lawns. All the geology reports have been reviewed by our county geologist, who has subsequently agreed with the recommendations in the geology report that have been carried through to the mitigations and the conditions of approval for this project. The road abandonment I discussed a little earlier, and we do have a remainder parcel. The issue with this remainder parcel at this point is that Public Parks is asking for a trail condition on this remainder parcel, which requires that we let you know that this is part of the Salinas River Area Plan, and that's one of the reasons why Parks is requesting this trail along this remainder parcel. With that, I'm requesting that you approve the negative declaration and approve tentative tract map 2723 with the trail condition that I handed out a little earlier this morning that was provided by County Parks. And I'll be available for any questions you may have. Thank you.
Bob, it's in your district.
Yeah, I had a couple. Going back to the negative declaration on page 353, geology and soils and involved activities within a 100-year flood zone. You have a checked insignificant impact, but correct me if I'm wrong, this map is for some areas are in the 100-year flood zone. Am I correct on that?
Some of the slopes and some of the lots are in the 100-year flood zone. Right. However, the building parcels are not.
And right, so you've done that with building envelopes, and so I don't know, maybe I'm picking a nit here, but it seems to me that there would be an impact, but we mitigated it by pushing the things out of there. But it's important to note that the 100-year flood zone is, I don't know, maybe I'm barking.
An activity. So if there's been a footprint that's been established that's outside of the zone, it seems to me that that's...
Well, I guess my one of the questions I wanted to raise was about the remainder parcel, which appears to me to be largely within the 100-year flood zone. And so I think you are barking up a proper tree. I mean, just to question what the nature of the remainder parcel is and whether there's, you know, what mitigations are proposed on it.
Well, I think the remainder is the remainder, and they can't do anything to it until they come up with a new application.
Right.
Could be a building permit, I suppose.
Well, or, you know, why is this whole parcel not being treated with this one application, and maybe we can speak to that when the applicant talks.
That'd be a good question. The next question I had, going back in the conditions, starting on page 3-6, condition 13, the proposed drainage swale and storm drain shown on the tentative map are to be contained. I didn't see any storm drains and stuff. Of course, I got an itty-bitty map.
Oh, here we go, Bob. We got a bigger map.
Different project.
That's a different project, though. It's just down the street
a
bit.
Oh, yeah, right.
Okay. All right. I couldn't read that one too good either. But at any rate, maybe the applicant or somebody can show us where these storm drains and drainage swales are, and or maybe you guys got a different map than I do.
I can show you where it is on the site. It's on the remainder parcel, as you can see here, we've got, here it is, excuse me, a tributary or a swale that water runs off from here onto the remainder parcel. And
the preliminary grading and drainage plan involving some yard swales that cross more than one lot, and it was part of the overall scheme to keep drainage from running down the bluff face. And I think we were also interested in this condition applying to those proposed swales that are a function of the development of the residential parcels. Do you have an exhibit that shows those? Because I think it's not the one that's on page 324.
I have a preliminary grading plan that I can pull out. And I just want to let you know, Richard, that there's an additional condition regarding the yard swales that are related to the drainage plan we discussed.
Right. Let me zero in on what I think Commissioner Rose is going at. I'm looking at the map, small as it is. I don't see any storm drains shown on the tentative map. And that may be one of your questions.
Which gets to what Richard was talking about. We got to keep the drainage from going down the bluff, so there ought to be a plan to put it in some other direction.
And so Condition 15 has the instruction that there shall be no runoff over the bluff edge. But then Condition 13 is a thing that talks about having those facilities within designated easements. And I think the two work together. And I'm not saying that any change is needed. I just think this other exhibit might help clarify it.
Okay, we've got a picture of somebody to start talking about it.
So the item that's highlighted in yellow, on this screen it looks yellow. I hope that's what everybody else sees. That is the proposed yard swale that keeps the lot's drainage from running down the face of the bluff. And it's a necessary element of proper respect for the geologic condition of the site. And then each yard swale at its downhill end connects into a storm drain system that connects them all together and carries them. There's an individual point of depositing the runoff down at the bottom of the bluff so that it won't be erosive.
Okay,
that's an appropriate proposal, and Condition 13 makes sure that all of these facilities will be in easements as necessary so that they stay in place and keep doing their job.
So okay. Is there going to be any kind of filter or anything at the end of this pipe?
Yeah, sure, absolutely. The necessary elements of the design are not the subject of Condition 13. They are a standard element of our review.
And so just for my own education, what type of filtration do we use?
There's lots of different types, and I'm sure we haven't already selected. That'll be a function of the design phase.
Okay.
And how about maintenance of this? Does this require maintenance?
This will be a private facility benefiting the property owners, so it'll be a function of the homeowners association.
I may be all by myself here, but that's the kind of detail that I would like to see as a planning commissioner, because I'm very interested in preserving and maintaining water quality in the county's waterways, and if there are a variety of ways to approach filtration of non-point source urban runoff like this, I would like to have that discussion at the Planning Commission level in the future, if that's possible. I may be all by myself. But.
Which kind of gets to my next question on 14 and 15. Drainage plans shall be in accordance with the recommendations of the following, and the stormwater collection drainings, and they list several Sierra Delta and Buena Technical Services reports, and I don't want to read all those things. I'm sure they're this thick, but I did send an email to the applicant's agents asking perhaps that they could be summarized, and I'm getting a little bit from Richard. I guess this is the kind of thing that's in there.
Right.
Okay. Okay, now I'll move on to condition number 25. Prior to completion of tract improvements, applicants will install fencing 5 feet from the terrace. But it doesn't say what kind, but I look at the page 369, and mitigation measure BR11 talks in particular the kind of fence that we are supposed to have, aka a Kid Fox friendly fence. And that doesn't say this here, so did we kind of miss that, or does that level of detail be in there? That's kind of an open-ended question for anybody who wants to answer that.
Doesn't it, you're on condition number 26 under fencing?
25 and 26.
Maintain a rural character, and it's also going to, of course, have to be leaky to allow the
Kit Fox's transit ability.
Okay, so you're saying between the mitigation measure and the Kit Fox conditions, we're not going to put in a solid board fence?
Nope.
Okay. Okay. And moving on. Seepage pit. What's a seepage pit? That's on page 317. And these are supposed to be back 50 feet from the bluff edge, and it sounds to me like it's a water thing, and obviously it does need to be, but I don't know what a seepage pit is.
Where are you on 317?
317, the first condition, U.
Oh, okay.
Required setback.
It's a type of leach field. That's about the extent of my knowledge, not being an environmental health specialist.
Okay.
The geologist could respond to that based it's one of their conditions.
Okay, and I also said Ms. Jardine that too, so she's probably ready for that. That's the end of my questions, Mr. Chairman.
All right, any more questions of staff?
I have a number of them. The question about taking a break has come up.
Well,
Mr. Chairman, how do you want to do that?
Well,
I could use a little bio break myself.
Okay, I hear concerns for a break. It's 5 after. We'll reconvene at 20 after 10.